I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Here's the scenario. Pain in your lower back sends you to the doctor's office. There, your doctor prescribes an MRI scan. But do you really need it? It's estimated that upwards of $200 billion is wasted each year in the United States on unnecessary medical care. That's why a number of prestigious medical groups have joined the Choosing Wisely campaign, recommending that doctors weigh the costs and not just the effectiveness of treatments for their patients, and making it clear that some tests might do more harm than good. Dr. Barry Meisenberg, an oncologist and leader in quality of care innovation at Anne Arundel Medical Center, on getting doctors to care about costs. He's coming up next on Midday. First, the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day again. Here is a number for you to think about, $226 billion. According to the Journal of the American Medical Association, that was the estimated amount of money wasted in 2012 due to unnecessary medical care. It's an alarming number in an age of high health care costs. I'm sure all of us have been to the doctors at some point, have undergone a medical test that proved inconclusive at best, at worst, produced false positive results. In fact, some medical testing can do more harm to the patient than good. And we have seen in recent years here in the Baltimore area scandal and litigation over the overuse of cardiac stents, arterial stents, to open arteries of hundreds of patients, just to cite one example. That's why a number of prestigious medical groups have gotten behind the Choosing Wisely campaign. That's what they call it, Choosing Wisely. This is a public health campaign launched to encourage important dialogues between doctors and their patients to avoid unnecessary treatments and unnecessary health care spending. Doctors are being asked to assess the cost effectiveness of the tests they order and the medicine they prescribe. As part of the campaign, dozens of medical groups have issued information about how effective or ineffective certain tests can be. 500,000 doctors have received these lists since 2012. Here with me to talk about this, the Choosing Wisely campaign, and about medical testing in general, Dr. Barry Meisenberg. Dr. Meisenberg is an oncologist, and he's chair for Quality Improvement in Healthcare Systems Research at Anne Arundel Medical Center. He's also a vocal supporter of the Choosing Wisely campaign. We welcome here Dr. Meisenberg to Midday. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Honored to be here.
Would you call this a movement?
I certainly would agree with the language you used in your introduction. That is a campaign, a public health campaign. And like other public health campaigns, it's going to be sustained. And we'll see incremental changes until we know we've accomplished what we set out to do.
Yeah, a movement, to me, that word has sort of grassroots meaning, you know, something that has that takes on an energy maybe we didn't expect. It comes out of the grassroots. What about that? Do you feel like this has that kind of nature?
Well, it does, particularly since some of the people behind it, we didn't mention that yet. But this is, yes, initiated by medical groups, but it has partners who are in the consumer health side of the world, like Consumers Reports, and which, of course, came from the Consumers Union, and they are very much a movement.
Now, let me ask you something about your role at Anne Arundel Medical Center, that title, Quality Improvement in Healthcare Systems Research. It sounds like, you know, quality of care innovations, maybe, always looking to improve.
Yeah, so many institutions have roles like this, and different terms are used, but there's been an increasing focus on patient safety, and sometimes you have to innovate the medical processes in order to achieve that. And Arundel Medical Center is very involved in that sort of work. It's way beyond one person or one office. It's throughout the organization, really. It's a whole culture. And I'm pleased to, you know, head up certain parts of that effort.
So your effort in that regard, I mean, is akin to what we're talking about today, is it not?
Well, exactly right. So which is how and why I got into this campaign. So I first learned about this not in the prestigious New England Journal of Medicine, but in the prestigious New York Times, where there was an editorial and coverage of the event And I saw that this fits exactly in what we are trying to accomplish at Anne Arundel with the improvement of quality and patient safety and eliminating unnecessary care. So it's a little unusual for providers of medical care to be telling the public, oh, you don't need certain things done. Don't get these tests. Because, you know, they're in the business and it's a business of providing medical services. But our institution has embraced a new ethic, one of what we call population health, where we're, you know, trying to focus more on the wellness of our patients that we serve as opposed to just running more people through our CAT scanners.
Is this a particular interest to oncologists, doctors who treat people for cancer?
Well, I wouldn't say so. I think there's participation now from perhaps 40 different medical specialties or subspecialties. And although oncologists certainly have a big piece of that $300 million or billion dollars that you mentioned,
$200 billion,
we're responsible for a good part of that. There are primary care groups who have written standards, obstetrics, pretty much every medical specialty you could mention.
On a personal level, is this something you've seen over the years or grown increasingly concerned about?
Well, I would say the answer to that is yes. As a physician and a practicing physician, I'm all too familiar with the scenario where an otherwise well person has a test or a procedure that was well-intentioned, but probably not indicated, and the result is something that no one anticipated. So a false positive result or a little uncertainty about the meaning of a shadow on a CAT scan. So then the patient is invited back to have another one 2 months later, and if there's no resolution of the abnormality, then you're talking about a biopsy. And people have been harmed by this sort of spiraling or cascading of rare but not unheard of events. And you mentioned the financial impact, but it also has an impact on harming individuals, harming patients, or harming people. So I am personally interested in avoiding as much of that as possible.
It's an interesting quote. You alluded to this New York Times story from April. Cost of treatment may influence doctors. The lead of that story saying they can no longer ignore the rising prices of health care. Some of the most influential medical groups in the nation are recommending that doctors weigh the costs, not just the effectiveness of treatments, as they make decisions about patient care. In this story, I thought this quote was pretty interesting, from Martin Samuels, who is chairman of the neurology department at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Dr. Samuels said doctors risked losing the trust of patients if they told patients, I'm not going to do what I think is best for you because I think it's bad for the healthcare budget in Massachusetts. Quote, there should be forces in society who should be concerned about the budget, about how many MRIs we do, but they shouldn't be functioning simultaneously as doctors. What did you think of that comment?
I think it's a fascinating quote, and it represents a very large fraction of physicians. So I also think he's wrong, and I'll tell you why. Most physicians have been trained either explicitly or implicitly through peer group socialization, either not to think about costs or to ignore them. And there's efforts abounding now to change that, but as if costs of care were unworthy of us. And as he says, someone else should be worrying about that, not us. And I'll tell you why I think he's wrong, that they do play a role. And he mentioned cost to society. So there are ramifications of unchecked spiraling of medical care costs. The fact that your health care insurance and mine has become much more pricey, the fact that there are high deductibles leading to high out-of-pocket expenses is not just something that's happened to us. It's because of a high spending, some of which is wasted, as you pointed out. So the fact that our children will go through their entire careers and lives having their salaries suppressed because of high health care costs mean that this is not a victimless situation. And then, of course, there are the patients who are paying out of pocket for a lot of these tests, procedures, medications. And I think his comment ignores the significant harm. So we've recently been grappling with a concept that some intelligent person has termed financial toxicity. That is the financial harm we do to patients with our medical recommendations. And this is very much a cancer issue. And our studies, both those we've done in Anne Arundel and across the country, have shown that cancer patients undergo a significant amount of financial stress. They suffer loss of income from a variety of reasons, high out-of-pocket costs, their level of satisfaction is high, their family stress is up, and doctors don't seem to know about it. We don't ask about it. We don't have time sometimes for patients to let them tell us about it. Or we make assumptions that whatever the cost of care is, the patient is just interested in pursuing treatment anyhow. So I think in response to that, I would say we have to worry about other patients being harmed when healthcare costs accelerate, and we have to worry about the financial injury to our own patients by unchecked medical spending.
Now, on the other side of that, this occurs to me that on the other side of that, a doctor has maybe, I don't want to assume all doctors are, looking to put exorbitant costs on treatment of patients as much as they can, bill as much as they can, like lawyers do by the hour. But, on the other side of that, the doctor may have a conflict. You could look at it that way. You could say doctors have a conflict and they shouldn't be recommending treatments, or there should be always a second opinion.
Well, sure. So second opinions are important for major procedures. But so there's all different financial arrangements. So some doctors, and you mentioned one at the outset, one very serious event where a physician was personally being financially awarded by doing stuff. But I don't think that that's the major motivation for ordering a lot of these test procedures, medications. And it's actually a very interesting question to address. Why does this happen? So in my informal conversations with physicians, I find that they do it because, number one, they're trying to meet the expectations of patients. You get a sense for someone, nonverbal communication. If they're there in your office and they're telling you about their headache, is it something they're really worried about or they're not worried about? And it changes what you do. You want to please your patient. Two, there is a normative behavior that, my colleagues order this test in this situation, and so I want to be doing what my colleagues do. You find that in every profession, including yours. And then there's what we call affirmation bias. Well, I know the guidelines say that the CAT scan for back pain isn't helpful, but I remember this one patient I did, and we found this, and we needed to know that, and we had to fix it. So that's a bias in our logical thinking. And then, of course, unmentioned is the issue about concern about liability, which is as prominent in Maryland and as in any other state. Mm-hmm. So how much all these factors weigh in physicians' decision-making is uncertain. It's hard to tease out.
Take a minute here, Dr. Meisenberger, and explain, how did the Choosing Wisely campaign set out to do this? I mentioned these lists that each society, a medical society, was asked to come up with, right?
Right. So this is about a little more than 2 years, at least formally. It was a challenge from one physician who wrote in the New England Journal that physicians were contributing to this waste of money, and challenged every professional society to act professionally to identify in their own specialty things that should be discussed or challenged. So they're not do-not-do lists, and it's easy to misunderstand that. They are things that you shouldn't do routinely without more careful thought and evaluation.
And these lists have been produced and been distributed to doctors. I said some 500,000 doctors have received these by now.
Received them. So there are professional societies. American Society of Oncology, for example, has promulgated them through our journals. They're available on the website for anyone. They're not secret. Anyone can look that up at choosingwisely.org and see the recommendations. And there also are the rationale and the reasoning behind the list is also discussed along with the evidence.
A question for our listeners today while Dr. Meisenberg is with us. Should doctors care about costs? Should this be part of the process now of evaluating you and suggesting a course of treatment or a medication? What do you think about this? And if you have questions about the Choosing Wisely campaign, please give us a ring. This is a good time to do it. 410 662-8780. Toll-free long distance, good from anywhere in the country. For the Midday Show at WYPR is 866-661-9309. We can also take questions by email. That address is midday@wypr.org. Dr. Barry Meisenberg of Anne Arundel Medical Center with us for the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. My guest, Dr. Barry Meisenberg, is chair for Quality Improvement Healthcare Systems Research at Arundel Medical Center. He's an oncologist and serves as director of the De Cesaris Cancer Institute at Anne Arundel Medical Center. And he's joined in the Choosing Wisely campaign and pushing this idea. And I'm curious, how have your colleagues responded to this? Have you talked to fellow oncologists about this?
Yes, it's a fascinating experience to get feedback from your colleagues. Always humbling. I find that physicians, not just oncologists, physicians are interested in the message. And they say to me, oh, but it's not that simple. You know, it's not that simple because, as we mentioned previously, there are many motivations for ordering some of these tests. And a lot of it is a physician's desire to please a patient. And what they've said to me is, why don't you ask a patient why they want these tests? And before you talk to me about why I order them.
You know, we had a doctor in here from Hopkins, a medical psychologist who's done surveys of patient attitudes. It was really fascinating. And one of the things he found is that all of us, when we go to our doctor, want something. We want to be prescribed something. I personally, I don't want to. I like to walk out of my doctor's office after an exam with a clean bill of health. But if you're not feeling well and you go to the doctor, if he says, you know, take aspirin, you'll be okay, or this problem you're having, it will heal itself in time. A lot of people just are not satisfied with that.
So that that is a fascinating phenomenon. It may be an American phenomenon as opposed to how other cultures around the world interact with their healthcare systems. And we have, as a public, have been brought up to think that medicine will help us. I mean, public has been helped along by the medical profession. If you look at medical advertising, some of it is pretty extreme in terms of making promises. So you have a symptom, take a pill, and you watch television, you'll get the same message. So if you have a physician who's willing to tell you, you don't need this, you don't need that, give it some time, I would say keep that guy, bake him a cake, and stick around, because there's a physician who understands a lot of somatic complaints or symptomatic complaints or don't need an intervention, and he's protecting you from harm in doing so.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here on Midday if you'd like to join our conversation or have questions for Dr. Meisenberg while he's with us. Do doctors understand the costs of things?
So, well, there's millions of doctors, so there's millions of answers to that question.
Sure.
But in general, I think we don't know enough about what a patient pays. For one thing, there are so many different insurance plans, policies, high deductible, low deductible, out-of-coverage, out-of-pocket costs can vary dramatically. Even when you have the same insurance, like Medicare, you could be a different place in the so-called donut hole on medications. So the short answer to your question is not well enough. We don't know. And that may be the reasons why it's almost never discussed. You know, there was a survey of oncologists asking if we talk to patients about the cost of chemotherapy, and the oncologists answer that question yes, 50 to 75% of the time. But if you ask patients that question, the answer is no, about 75% of the time. No, not at all. So there does seem to be a gap, a mismatch when we talk about communication about cost of chemotherapy.
Back to the Choosing Wisely campaign
for
a moment and just how it works. You were explaining that before the break. So in your own field, in oncology, for instance, you received a list of procedures, tests, treatment courses that, what, you should, the advice is don't do these, not don't do these, it's question whether it's necessary in all cases.
Right.
Is that where the emphasis is?
That would be discuss it before you do it, don't do it routinely.
Yeah.
So what we've done at Anne Arundel is we've embraced the campaign and rolled it out. we've embedded it in our electronic medical record so a physician can get to the lists quickly and use it when he's having a dialogue with a patient. You gave an example about back pain.
Mm-hmm.
Use that list and show them. And on that website are many of the guidelines written for the public. Not all of them, but many of them have explanations for the public. So you can use those. We talk about it at our cancer case conferences when we review patients together as a group. We say, you know, someone might say, well, I think I'll order this test or that test. We'll say, well, you know, the guidelines say, and by the way, our guidelines on this go way beyond choosing wisely. You know, why would you order that test? It's not necessarily going to be helpful. It won't change your management. Or sometimes we do it in retrospect.
Right.
You say, ah, look what you've done now. Now you've ordered a test and the patient has to come back in 2 months. So that sort of given, that interaction, that give and take is very helpful for us. We're used to that in oncology. Many physicians don't practice in that sort of environment, though. And so what we've tried to do is then prep them with the tools. But what else you'll see if you were to come to our hospital, we have these TV screens at various portions of the lobby, in the waiting room, in the ED. And they're filled with choosing wisely messages.
Hmm.
Very, very unusual.
Very unusual
sit
for
in the
a
emergency
hospital.
To sit in the emergency department and say, you may not need this blood test for Lyme disease. You may not need this antibiotic for your sinusitis. And we're hoping just to provoke this dialogue, and that's why I said at the outset, it's a campaign.
I mean, that is impressive, I mean, because hospitals need to make money, right?
Well, they're a business, and not even a not-for-profit business wants to do stuff, but as I mentioned, our focus in Anne Arundel is shifting to keeping the population healthy, the people we serve, and their wellness is as important as doing a procedure.
I'm curious about this. This goes back to the subject of patients and patient attitudes. And I wonder, as health insurance expands in America, more people get coverage, people who didn't have coverage or are underinsured get insurance, whether they'll be this new generation of insured young Americans, for instance, will take a consumer's approach to their relationship with the doctor and actually question. Mm-hmm. Because if you have insurance, you figure, well, I don't really need to know what that antibiotic costs because most of it is going to be covered by my insurance. You see what I mean? If you're not paying for it yourself.
So we'll see what happens, and people will study this. In a few years, you'll have someone on this show who will know the answer to that and
can discuss
the data, what the utilization pattern
is. Something I wonder about.
But what I would say about this, again, it's not just about cost. So let's talk about this example you raise about antibiotics. Antibiotics for a condition that's unlikely to be due to bacteria or a waste, right? Because antibiotics are antibacterial. A lot of the miseries, affections that afflict us are due to viruses. And antibiotics are a waste, literally. If it only costs $7, you could say it's a small waste. But there's another harm to that, and that is the risk of inducing and driving resistance to antibiotics. And that, by the way, is a harm that we all share. And it's not exactly a lunchtime conversation, but we share our microbiology with each other.
We've had this conversation at lunch before. Don't worry.
So we share it.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
So if your doctor's giving you antibiotics, there's people in this newsroom who may be having your drug-resistant bacteria. And as a society, we have more and more of that. And that's not just expensive. It's dangerous, and people die of that problem. And then you've also presumably heard about this thing called C. diff, Clostridium difficile. It's a very bad infection that occurs because that one particular bacteria overgrows in the intestine because all the healthy bacteria have been wiped out by powerful antibiotics. So the recommendations in choosing wisely about antibiotics are about much more than cost. They're about avoiding harm. And you've said you go to a doctor, you're happy when you get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There's many other patients who are not happy when they get nothing. And instead of a medical psychologist, what you need is a behavioral economist to help us explain why patients go expecting something and what do they really want and why.
Dr. Barry Meisenberg is with us in this hour of the show. We're talking about getting doctors involved in evaluating the costs of treatment. I guess that's one way of looking at it. This is not a traditional thing. It's not something that was taught in medical school. I mean, do you remember from medical school training?
Yeah.
Any training about costs of procedures?
Well, actually, as I mentioned, it was either avoided or it was told that discussion of cost is unworthy of the physician because of what this man points out. If the public or your patient finds out you're worried about costs, they won't trust you. So it is now increasingly being part of the curriculum, and we are having this dialogue at all levels. And it may take years to change that pervasive attitude, but I think we will be able to do it.
You know, going back to that statement that I read earlier from Dr. Samuels, quoted in the New York Times on this, saying that there should be forces in society that consider the budget, consider the cost of things such as MRIs, but those people should not be also functioning as doctors. So I wonder, he's not here with us, but I wonder, where does that counsel and advice come from?
Well, I think what he wants he wants to do is to say to a patient, oh, I can't order an MRI for you because your insurance company, your utilization reviewer.
They want to blame it on the insurance company.
Bingo. Right.
Yeah.
Then the patient feels better. He feels better. That doesn't really solve anything.
No. 410-662-8780. Let's take a couple of calls, Dr. Meisenberg, while you're with us. Yuki has a question about the way choosing wisely works. Yuki, thank you for calling.
Hi, yes, Dan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Big fan of the show. My question for Dr. Meisenberg is I work for a healthcare technology startup that is actually implementing choosing wisely rules as part of a cloud-based clinical decision support. But one thing that we found is the way that the guidelines are published are in these chunks and paragraphs designed to be consumed by clinicians. So we're trying to extract the specifics in terms of, okay, this ICD-9 code, this ICD-10 code, this NOMED concept. And we're finding that there's a lot of ambiguity. So I was wondering if there are any plans in the Choosing Wisely campaign to provide, more detailed coding terminologies so that these can be implemented into electronic medical records.
Mm. So I suspect you've used a lot of jargon that most of the listening audience won't be familiar with. But I would say to you that the guidelines are ambiguous, but really they're meant to be general because, remember, we're not prescribing the practice of medicine with guidelines. And we would never tell a physician you can't order an MRI for back pain.
You know, there was a story in my own newspaper back in April when all this was coming out about choosing wisely, Kaiser Health News analysis how different doctors' organizations, physicians' organizations had these medical specialty societies had set up their lists for choosing wisely. And some, well, there was one profession noted here, one area where they basically listed things that really didn't involve their field very much, were easy to list because most doctors in that field weren't recommending them. I think that was in orthopedics.
Yes.
But there were other fields, a gastroenterologist, radiologist, clinical pathologist, who did include procedures that are considered lucrative in their field. So, I mean, what do you have a general sense of how this is going, this choosing? Because this is a very important part of it, right?
Well, I think we're at the beginning of the campaign. You've mentioned some of the criticisms of choosing wisely that doctors, professional societies haven't put their own income deriving or income rewarding procedures. Is a legitimate one.
Well,
and every society has to decide.
It sounds like there has been some of that.
And there has been some. So the American Academy of Family Practice even says you don't need an annual physical exam. There's no evidence that it does anything.
Yeah,
so,
I saw that here.
Fascinating.
I was going to ask you about that. Which society was that?
I believe it was the American Academy of Family Practitioners. It's on their website, but I believe that's the one.
Yeah, it's listed. They don't feel. Now, there's another society that disagrees with that, right?
Fair enough, and you could argue about the evidence, but we should at least have the conversation.
Dr. Augusto Sarmiento is quoted here by Kaiser Health News. Former president of the Orthopedic Academy and a retired chairman of orthopedics at the University of Miami Medical School, he said more significant overused procedures include replacing hips and knees when the patient's pain is minimal and can be managed with medicine. So that's just to give an example to our listeners here about this. 410-662-8780. I have a couple of questions or comments to read off email. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. Roy, writing to us from Gainesboro, Tennessee, says it's a well-known fact that patients covered by insurance plans pay less than patients paying cash. What is not known is how much the healthcare provider discounts the billed amount when insurance pays. This discounting factor to insurance firm payments could be significant for some patients paying cash. How is the consumer, the patient, to find out the discount provided by the health insurance firms?
Let me see if I'm not sure I understand.
I'm not sure
that.
I understand that
the
either.
Question, except he's correct to point out that physicians, and I'm talking about in outpatient physicians, have contracts with insurance companies that pay them different rates. Medicare pays everyone the same in a locality, but different insurance companies can pay different rates. If you don't have insurance, I guess you're free to negotiate with a private physician how much you'll pay. And I don't know that someone without insurance can find out what a Blue Cross Blue Shield
does
is
a doctor,
paying.
In order to participate in this, choosing wisely, does a doctor really need to know all that?
No.
A doctor needs to know what his own society, his own medical society is saying is a questionable, well, not questionable, maybe that's not the right word,
well,
worth questioning in each case, certain procedures, certain treatments.
Right. And I think the physicians need to know their own guidelines. And if you're a private primary care doctor, you probably need to know a lot of others, too, if you're going to advise your patient whether they really need an annual EKG, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to pharmaceuticals, can we talk a little bit about that? Because there seem to be some extraordinary courses of treatment with pharmaceuticals with extraordinary costs.
Yes.
That's what I'm getting at. I'm kind of shocked about some of these that I read. What about doctor awareness of that?
So doctors are aware, and I can speak authoritatively only in my own field, oncology, although some of the other high-cost drugs which have captured the nation's attention and Congress's attention are in other fields. So we're aware, we're shocked, we're appalled, and yet we find ourselves using these medications because we want to deliver the best outcome to patients. And our own research that we've recently conducted suggests that patients want to be treated with the, quote, best medicines, regardless of their own financial toxicity or financial burden. It's a fascinating phenomenon that we really need to understand, because a lot of our public policy is about cost sharing. We think we can curb the public's demand for test procedures or treatment by raising their copays or having tiered prescriptions. So you pay $20 for this drug and $40 for that, so that you'll ask for the $20 drug. But if it may not operate in cancer. We don't know that if you either have cancer or fear cancer or used to have cancer, whether the same cost considerations will be motivating to people. It's one of these questions in behavioral economics that we need to understand.
Right.
And so in the meantime, the way drugs are developed and priced in this country has led to these extraordinary costs. Now, I don't want to go outside my area of expertise to say it's good, it's bad, it shouldn't be, or whatever, but it's a phenomenon that we're all dealing with, and surveys show that doctors are aware of these high costs to some degree, but again, we don't know who's actually paying what, and our profession, though, I can tell you, is getting developing the tools to inform us to develop what we call value pathways. Hmm. So right now, you know, we have recommendations about how to treat any kind of cancer that you might have. But within the four or five different permissible or recommended treatment regimens, one might be substantially less expensive than another. And I don't think that you would, but maybe you might trade off a little bit of efficacy for a much lower cost. But we need those tools to discuss that with a patient. You know, cancer patients are in a terrible irony. They may have advanced disease. They're told to take these very expensive medications. They're second mortgaging their homes. They're liquidating savings that they once were devoted to inheritance. They're canceling trips, moving kids out of private colleges. And the longer they live, the worse it gets. It's a terrible irony. If they were to die quick, they'd save resources for their family. And we need the tools to have that conversation with patients. And we need the skill to have it as well.
You're listening to Midday on WYPR. Dan Rodericks with Dr. Barry Meisenberg, an oncologist and chair for quality improvement and healthcare systems research at Anne Arundel Medical Center. We're discussing the Choosing Wisely campaign which pushes doctors to have conversations with their patients about medical tests, exams, all kinds of procedures, and the cost of these things. And all the hope is, the mission statement of Choosing Wisely says that the right care is delivered at the right time, and I guess part of that would be at the right cost, too. 410-662-8780 is our number. Dr. Meisenberg, here's an interesting email from Peggy in Baltimore. She says, "Doctors don't want to know!" Exclamation point. She says, "My doctors have typically seemed to find it embarrassing to discuss the cost of their services. When asked, they have always referred me to the billing office or the person in the office. They tell me, frankly, that they do not know what the procedure I am signing up for costs. What is this about? Are they embarrassed that as a retiree on a fixed income, I will struggle to pay their fees? What is that about? I want to thank Dr. Meisenberg for exposing the need for doctors to be aware of the fees to those they serve who support them financially."
Yeah. So, again, different settings, different kind of physicians. You may work for a large group who sets the fees, negotiates the contracts, or a physician can be in private billing each insurance company separately. It's possible they actually don't know the detail. A billing person with expertise, part of this bureaucracy in American medical care, could look it up, see what a certain insurance company would reimburse. Are doctors embarrassed by it? Well, I think we're certainly not used to it. And I think that I encourage this individual to have those conversations, because if it's an elective procedure, that ought to be part of the formula, and you'll probably be teaching your physician at the same time that some people are price sensitive about what they want to have done. That's a good thing. You wouldn't hesitate when you bring your car into a shop.
Do you think that you'll see a new generation of doctors coming up who are savvy to this?
I think if this campaign and the other efforts we've mentioned are successful, we'll have a generation of physicians who won't be embarrassed to talk about costs, who won't think it's either unethical or won't think it's unworthy to discuss cost of care with patients.
It seems to me, looking at this as an outsider, there are three pressures here. There's the financial pressure to, as I was suggesting before, on doctors to, you know, if you work for a hospital, if you work for, you got a bill, there's that pressure to be profitable, right? Then there's the patient pressure, the patient who really doesn't want to hear what things cost, because when we're sick, ill, facing a serious treatment, we really don't want to hear what the cost is. We want to know that our insurance covers it. And if more people have insurance, maybe they'll be less concerned about costs. And the last part would be your peers, you know, doctors who just, as you say, find it crass to discuss this, or that not a topic that they're used to traditionally discussing.
Well, in a sense, what you've said, without saying the words explicitly, is we need to align the financial incentives so that we can all do what's right without having to close your practice and being unable to pay your employees. And the good news is that's starting to happen in Maryland, as well as around the country. And Maryland may be kind of ahead of the pack. And
in what regard?
Well, there's been over the last few months a change in the way hospitals are being reimbursed for their services, so that there's less of this pay for each item kind of philosophy, and hospitals can be penalized if they don't coordinate the care around their hospital well enough, and people are continuously readmitted to the hospital, or their overall Medicare spend is too high. And so it encourages hospitals to survive financially by addressing utilization issues in a way that does not sacrifice quality of care. And so that would have to happen before I think we'll all be able to say we're doing the right thing and we're still saving money and we're raising the quality of care.
Dr. Barry Meisenberg, our guest, visiting us today from Anne Arundel Medical Center. He's signed on to the Choosing Wisely campaign, which we're talking about here. 410-662-8780. Let's go to Whitehall and take this call from Jim. Thank you for calling Midday.
Yeah, hi, and thank you for taking my call. I tuned in late, and I was wondering if you covered the issue of unnecessary preoperative procedures.
Unnecessary pre-op procedures.
Because for cataract surgery, the unnecessary procedures from the one report, which I don't have in front of me, it's $30 billion a year. And your guest, the group, the umbrella group over your guest, was mentioned in that report. And I'm going to close by asking, you know, how can we educate ourselves? How can we avoid the unnecessary preoperative procedures? Right. And is there a website that could help us with that education? With that said, I'll hang up and listen to the response. Thank you.
Well, I think that's a great question. Preoperative tests are addressed in the Choosing Wisely guidelines. If not explicitly, then you could find them, I think, under the American Academy of Family Practice, talks about pre-op chest x-rays. We have long eliminated preoperative bleeding times by consensus, although they're not part of the Choosing Wisely guidelines. So without knowing the test or the procedure, I would simply say that pre-op guidelines are included. Now, what you can do if you're... In fact, I will tell you that one of the leaders of this campaign for the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation told me he could not get his orthopedic surgeon not to order a pre-op chest x-ray. He went armed with the guidelines, the data, the rules, and he ran into some bureaucracy that says, I got to check the box that said you had a pre-op chest x-ray. Mm-hmm. If you don't check the box, you can't have your test. So
why is that there? Why do you think that's there? I mean, we're speculating, but is it because of a lawyer somewhere who said you have to have this?
That's a speculation, but more likely it's just an old idea that has hung around and hung around and has never been purged off the checklist.
Okay.
And we know that pre-op chest x-rays, unless you have symptoms, don't add anything to the care.
This is taken from their website, I believe, right? Anne Arundel Health System website on Choosing Wisely.
It
said, this is part of the information that's available to the public on Choosing Wisely.
Yep.
And I thought it'd be interesting to read a couple of these things here.
Sure.
Just to give an example, the American Academy of Family Physicians recommends not performing routine screening tests such as EKG or stress tests for people who have no symptoms are at low risk for heart disease. These tests among those without symptoms or risk factors have a high rate of false positives that will lead to either more testing or over-treatment. Just to give our listeners an example here. And the American College of Radiology advises patients not to ask for CT scans or MRIs of the brain because of uncomplicated headaches, those without accompanying neurological signs and symptoms.
Right.
They are almost never helpful in discovering the cause or in rendering treatment. Moreover, they can also identify findings that turn out to be false positives, but only after a lot of anxiety and follow-up scans. So that's the kind of information you'd find from the Choosing Wisely campaign, the guidelines that Dr. Meisenberg was talking about here. Let's go to another question. Todd, calling from the Eastern Shore, wanted to make a comment. Go right ahead. Hi.
Yeah, my comment is this. I'm in the middle of trying to straighten out some billing issues. I had a tooth pulled and had a growth removed from the inside of my mouth at the same time. The oral surgeon that did this told me the day of the procedure that he had opted out of Medicare. As I was coming out of anesthetic, I signed an extra visa chit for $438. I spent several hours trying to straighten this out, and as far as I'm concerned, it's all about the money. That's the end of my comment.
Opted out. What does that mean? I'm not sure I understand. Opted out of what the reimbursement might be under Medicare?
Medicare, like any other insurance provider, is optional. And most physicians participate because so many patients have Medicare.
Right.
You're not required to. And if I had to guess, I'd say that doctor opted out because it wasn't paying him enough or he found there's too much bureaucracy or whatever reason. Telling someone that when you have your fingers in their mouth seems to be very inappropriate to me, and that whenever that decision was made, you know, the patient should have been notified well in advance so they could make other options. I think that Mr. Todd does have some options there, a writing letter to the institution where it was done and the physician. And I think that's egregious. I would agree.
Here's an interesting email from John. says, end of life. I have read that the last 2 years of life account for a very high percentage of health care costs. Are we as a society afraid to let people die, and are doctors afraid to tell patients they are dying?
So that's a great question. Here we've waited 53 minutes for the dynamite. I would say the answer to that question is yes, as a society, and yes, as some physicians are. We know that our, yeah, so he said 2 years, the end of life. It's probably more like 6 months. It's astonishing. Something like 20% of a patient's entire Medicare spend will be in the last 6 months of life. And as a society, we haven't come to terms with that process. And one of the reasons we alluded to earlier is the marketing messages that the public gets about the capacity of medicine to extend life. And then as individuals, we have discomfort about it. So we don't have enough people with advanced directives. Even if they have an advanced directive, it doesn't necessarily change the care they've given. We need a national dialogue, but also one that's focused locally. I will tell you that many physicians know that a lot of care at the end of life is futile, and they will tell you that it's the patient and or their family that doesn't get that, or have to be learn it the hard way.
My father died. This is the same letter from John. My father died in December 2013, congestive heart failure, 3 months short of his 95th birthday. During the last 2 to 3 years of life, we had a dermatologist recommend surgical removal of small, slow-growth skin cancers. A doctor recommend a colon cancer exam because my father couldn't remember if he ever had one. And a podiatrist recommends surgical removal of an infected toe. The infection was being managed by his general practitioner with antibiotics, and he was not in pain. Mm-hmm. This in spite of the fact that it was obvious that his heart was failing. So, I wonder if we could ask, what did the family members say about this?
I suspect that each of those physicians was looking only at their own body part, and they weren't looking at the picture in total. And thank God this 95-year-old gentleman had a family who could who was with him and helped make those decisions.
As far as the Choosing Wisely campaign goes, they have their own website. But as I said, there's also information on from your own medical center on website available. And Dr. Barry Meisenberg, who's been our guest in this hour, is at Anne Arundel Medical Center. He's chair for quality and patient safety and director of the Center for Healthcare Improvement there as well. So you have a lot of different roles, but you're taking on this one, and I guess you'd be talking to your peers a lot, right?
I do indeed, and I think we've at Anne Arundel Medical Center, the physicians get it. We have a dialogue about it a lot. Our consciousness collectively has been raised about it, and I think that is moving in ripples to dialogue with patients.
And before you go, I mean, what kind of feedback are you hearing so far? We only got about a minute left here, but from patients, what are your peers saying about the patient reaction
to
this?
So you have to be very careful, I think, when talking to patient groups about this. So it's a little complex. They don't want to be accused of rationing, the R word. And this has nothing to do with Obamacare. But when you explain it in terms of preventing harm, it resonates much more effectively. And if you do want to talk about costs or the conversation gets to costs, what I found is most helpful is talking to people about protecting their children and their grandchildren from a lifetime of financial shackles because of high health care costs.
Excellent. Well, you're an excellent spokesman for this effort here in Maryland. It's nice to have you on the show, Dr. Meisenberg. I'm glad we could do this. Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks very much for coming along. And thanks, everyone, for tuning into our first hour of Midday today. More information about the Choosing Wisely campaign and Dr. Meisenberg can be found on the Dan Rodericks Facebook page or on the WYPR website. We'll take a break now for lunch, as we always do. On Thursday, lunch is provided by Breathe Bookstore Cafe. Breathe Bookstore Cafe serves vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free savories, sweets, coffee, tea, juices, and more. Breathe Bookstore Cafe is open 7 days a week, and you can find it on the Avenue 36th Street in Hamden. Please stay tuned for the news from NPR and then the second hour of our show coming right up.